it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the 1-2, and that one lifted high and deep into center field. Perkins going back to the track. He runs out of room. It's gone. Jake Berger with a home run just a little to the left of straightaway center field. He puts Texas on the board here at 2-1.
A double Berger, four straight, 15 of 20, seven games over, 2.5 back in the West, 1.5 back in the wild card, and you get the slumping New York Mets starting tomorrow on this radio station. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean, RJ, and Bobby on your official home of the Texas Rangers, joined by play-by-play voice, the man you just heard, the great Matt Hicks on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, Hicksie. How are you?
Good. Good morning to you guys. How are you?
We're great because in part of this baseball team, probably same for you. Be honest. Corey Seager goes down and the Texas Rangers end up in this position on September 11th. Are you believing it?
No. I mean, come on. I mean, and it's not just Corey Seager going down. It's, so many key players and you know, not just losing a Nathan Eovaldi who was having a Cy Young type campaign, but, you know, all of the position players, Seager, Simeon, Garcia, Carter, losing Sam Haggerty, who was a real catalyst for the offense. So, I don't think you could have envisioned this, and you certainly couldn't have thought about back in spring training. Well, we're going to get some journeyman minor leaguer who's not even in the system be the guy that, you know, carries the team at a most critical time in the season against the club with the best record in baseball. I mean, you know, these are things that just you don't think about but happen. And it's one of the beauties of the sport that, you can on paper take a look at a matchup and say, they're probably not going to do very well. And then you go ahead and sweep a team like Milwaukee. It's just been kind of crazy here these last few weeks.
Are you prepared to tell Bochy, to tell the injured players to just stay injured? And you want to start these guys the rest of the way?
You don't want to mess with a good thing. I mean, that's part of baseball's history, right? You know, you get on a winning streak. You want to continue to do the things that you do. So, you know, some guys, you know, put on the same clothes every day. Some guys go to lunch at the same place every day. Whatever superstition that they have, you don't mess with a winning streak, right? So you're tempted to do that, but, you know, we've gotten – you know, good news here recently on, you know, the developments of Adolis Garcia and Marcus Simeon certainly isn't giving up on coming back at some point in the season. And, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, we get Corey Seager back. But you're right. If all of that happens, who goes?
You know, Matt, we've been talking about the idea of team chemistry and how, you know, maybe these young guys are just ignorant of the pressure and they're able to play free and it's infused all this energy. We've been trying to debate this. How much do you think clubhouse chemistry and generally just the culture can impact winning when you lose guys and have some of those issues?
You know, I often think maybe it's the other way around too, right? That winning creates a great chemistry in the clubhouse. You know, guys go out there, they do their jobs, and things are feeling pretty good, and it ends up, you know, showing in results on the field. The chemistry for this team has really been pretty consistent all season long, whether they've been winning or losing. You know, guys show up, they do their jobs, they are accountable. And they, you know, look to each other for support. And so I don't really think that the chemistry has changed a whole lot throughout the course of the season. But I certainly think that winning on a consistent basis helps that chemistry. And, you know, you show up you know, you're looking forward to playing. You know you've got a pretty good chance of winning regardless of who's in the lineup, and I think that kind of feeds on itself.
Matt Hicks joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, so Hicksy, like, when we all keep trying to draw parallels, I think, to, hey, 2023 wasn't feeling great necessarily at the end of the season. They get into the postseason. They go on this incredible run that they did. Around this same time of the season, how do you think this Rangers team fits that comparison to the 2023 team? And what are some other areas you may say, you know what, that it's different because that 23 team still had this going for them at that time?
Yeah, and, you know, you still have, obviously, guys that were here 2 years ago and remember that. And there's not any magic formula to how it's done. It's not like you're coming out, you know, getting on some highway and going, oh, yeah, this is where we were. Let's do this again. This is unique compared to 2 years ago, other than the fact that you do have, you know, some guys that were here and remember what happened. So it's just like, you can draw comparisons, but every season is different, and it sounds cliche, but every game is different, and the situation, you know, is a little bit different as well. And, you know, what's really helping here, not just the fact that the Rangers have, you know, won whatever it is now, like 14 of the last 18, to get back in this picture in a really strong way, but, you know, Houston's not playing all that great right now, and Seattle has been sort of on an even keel, but a little bit up and down, but, you know, not really on a tear. And so, you know, we've got a situation here where you've got five series remaining, and, you know, the Rangers don't play Seattle, but have an opportunity because they play the Astros coming up at the end of this road trip. And so an opportunity to gain some games on them. But then you go home and you're playing the Marlins and the Twins, you know, the two teams that aren't really playing for anything right now. So, you know, where 2 weeks ago or so, it seemed like it was a tall task, but now, because of the way the ball club has played, things are definitely within reach. You know, I think if you win the five remaining series, there's a really good chance that you're probably in this thing. And it doesn't matter how you get there. It's just getting there, and that's what the 2023 team, you know, showed everybody, that, you know, we limped into the postseason 2 years ago, and then something just sort of magically clicked, and we couldn't lose on the road. And so, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that again, but, you know, we might see something similar to how the team got into the postseason 2 years ago.
Matt, in the last five wins, the closer has been Maton, Armstrong, Martin, Armstrong, Maton. Playoff starts tomorrow. Who's the closer?
If the playoffs start tomorrow, then we're seeing what we're seeing right now. I think that Sean Armstrong gets the bulk of the chances. But just like Bruce Bochy said before the win yesterday over Milwaukee, that, you know, depending upon where we were, you know, in the other team's lineup, that you might see.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Armstrong go maybe even in the eighth inning, and that's what we saw yesterday, and then Phil Maton ended up getting the ninth. So for whatever reason, they liked that matchup of Armstrong, and in the eighth inning yesterday, we were at 5, 6, and 7 in the order, and, you know, Sean's been so good against right-handed pitching, but the way things were lining up for the Brewers in the eighth inning yesterday, you know, they had a lefty and a switch hitter at 5 and 7 respectively in the order. So it's, you know, he's even getting out lefties right now, and so I'm not so sure why that particular threesome was the matchup for Armstrong, but right now it doesn't seem to matter. Sean is pitching with extreme confidence here for Maton in the last 3 or 4 outings, but his curveball has been incredibly wicked, and he seems to be pitching with more confidence right now. Robert Garcia is on a run of something like, I don't know, 9 or 10 consecutive outings in which he's not given up a run. He's not figured in the back end yet. But, you know, this bullpen has been very reliable for the most part all season long. And so, you know, if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, I think we'd see the same thing we've seen here in the last, you know, week or so.
The great Matt Hicks joining us here. Rangers play-by-play swim timer and chess instructor. You're already the most interesting man on the Rangers broadcast because of your hip-hop knowledge and your pink pants and all that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone bring up chess instructor.
Yeah, I did that. Now, it's been a while since I've done that. But when before I joined the Rangers, when I was working in Corpus Christi, the school that my son was attending, the elementary school, needed some help, and they needed somebody to help with their chess club. And I volunteered, and there was nobody else that was volunteering. There was another father of a kid that his son was in the chess club. But they needed to have regular meetings, and so I volunteered to be there for those meetings and to tutor these kids and to help with the scheduling of them playing. And so for, I think it was 3 years, I helped out the Windsor Park Elementary Owls chess team.
Wow!
And they actually, you know, we helped to kind of grow the club a bit. They did pretty well. My son was, you know, playing chess at the time too. But it was a lot of fun helping those kids out. I used to play competitively before getting into the baseball on a regular basis, and so it was a lot of fun.
What's your favorite move?
What Ranger players did you take on? Certain players or people in the organization?
You know what, I have played, and it's funny. There's a running joke because Jeremy Jeffries not only played, but he had his own, like, really expensive chess board.
Oh.
And he and I got together, I forget what season it was, and we would play a game where, when I had the opportunity to be in the clubhouse, you know, we would make the moves, but we would suspend the game, and then, like, the next day that we were able to play, we would pick it up, and we never finished the game. It's, you know, sometimes you can sit down and you can play quickly, but Jeremy was one of those guys that wanted to think about his moves, and I'm the same way. So I'm not real good with speed chess, but he's one of the guys that I played, but we never had a result. And there are a number of guys on the team that will play, and one of the guys I've talked about playing against that is on the club now is Marcus Semien, but we've not been able to sit down and go at it. Semien told me that with the year that he was with Toronto in spring training, that the Blue Jays had a chess tournament all throughout spring training.
Wow.
A lot of guys play.
Matt, if this type of run was happening in football, I feel like it would be easier for us to talk about what the coach is doing, right? They're running the football. They're blitzing more. Same thing in basketball. The rotations have changed. They're running more in transition. You guys talk to Bochy every day. He's obviously a Hall of Famer. Explain to us the Bochy effect during this run and what you've been picking up from him and his greatness.
You know, just a calm, steady, guiding hand. He's not one of these managers or leaders that is rah-rah, gung-ho, coming into the, you know, the players' portion of the clubhouse and, you know, giving speeches and stuff like that. You know, he just sort of, and I don't want to say he removes himself because he doesn't, but he does give the players their space. But, you know, I think that Boach is a real interesting combination of old school and new school. I think that Boach, for many years prior to this analytics era or whatever you want to call it, was a guy who thought that way. And so, you know, he very much embraces the information that's available to him and to the players, and sort of helps to fuse, you know, that so that these guys can be at their best in terms of preparation for each game. But, you know, I think that there's a big part of Boach that's all about, as the game progresses, letting the game come to you and doing what the game asks you to do. Remember when we had Ron Washington as a manager, he would say that often. You know, what is the situation? What is the game asking you to do? And I think Bruce Bochy is definitely, you know, a proponent of that kind of baseball. So while the analytics may tell you that over the course of a season, this is the way to approach things, each game is different in what it is that you should be doing. And so, you know, I think right now what we're seeing is not just, you know, a bunch of guys going up there and trying to slug on offense, but guys going up and figuring out, what do I need to do in this at bat? And when I come up, you know, I'm not just hitting in a vacuum here. There's a certain situation and I should be looking, you know, for this pitch in this particular spot and trying to do this, as opposed to, okay, I need to be trying to, you know, drive the ball here regardless. And it seems to me like, you know, one of Bochy's strengths is figuring out and putting together a lineup that works on a nightly basis. And I think that's one of the big areas where, you know, he's impacted this ball club, you know, in a positive way.
Thank you so much, Hixie. Love having you on. Let's keep it rolling. Have a great call tomorrow night.
Sounds good. Thanks.
The great Matt Hicks from New York on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Have we uncovered the conspiracy in the NBA? And you know I'm not a conspiracy guy. I think we have one. And the latest details on the Charlie Kirk shooting next on The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.